Welcome to session number 7 of An Introduction to Self-Compassion with Robert Gonzalez.
I would like to begin with our opening meditation. Ask each person to just bring your awareness, bring your attention to your presence, simply being here, and bring your presence through your body first. I'd like you all to notice just the sense of the solidity of your physical body. Just feel the solidness of it. Feel the density of it. Feel the life in it. It's not just a blob of nothing. It's alive. There's rhythms and movements. Your heart is beating, breathing. All kinds of movements, some you're aware of, some you're not. Body is always in movement, in flow. If you're sitting with your feet on the ground, put both of your feet solidly on the ground. If you're sitting on the floor cross-legged, just notice the sensation of your butt on the floor. Feel the solidity of your presence. Simply be with all of the different forms, shapes of your experiencing. Whether the mind evaluates it as pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad, just notice it, that good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant, is just another shape of your experience. It's just another form that your experience takes on. And underneath, or at the core, of all the different shapes and forms that your experience takes, pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, there is a subtle life current, an energy, life energy, that moves in and through us. Breathe. Feel, touch, and in this space there is a receptivity, receptive to the life current that flows in and through you, and receptive to receiving signals, communication, energy from what is apparently outside of you. My voice, maybe sounds or smells in the room that you're in. Life experience can be experienced as a constant flow, opening and closing, coming and going. I'm going to read a poem by Rumi to open this up. Your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hand opens and closes and opens and closes. If it were always a fist or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small contracting and expanding. The two as beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. Because I love connecting with people and something that is alive, if upon hearing that, receiving that, this touched or resonated in one or two people, I'd love to hear some brief sharing about what that might be.
There's something about the last couple lines of that when I heard it, and especially the image of the bird wings, I could just feel my whole body relax, like a sense of acceptance. I mean, that's the best thing I can, the most accurate thing. It's just like an acceptance for all of it. It just really touched me.
Thank you. So within this topic, the inner work, and of course the outer work of compassion, self-compassion, the topic of today, K, carries many different dimensions. And each of our classes or each of the weeks, my intention is to focus on primarily on one particular aspect or dimension, while encompassing all of them because they all come into play. And so the dimension that I want to focus on today is inner being, and the two dimensions of our inner being are presence and form, as I define and describe it. What I would like to do is to share some thoughts, some of the talk that I have around what presence and form is. And I think the probably a good way to begin it is to define what I mean by presence and form as these two dimensions of our inner being. One of the ways that I'd like to do that, there are certain small pieces that I'd like to share with you, and each of them has sort of a depth or a richness to them. And so I'm going to pause after I read each one and just to check with anyone to see if there's any questions or responses to this part of it. It's going to be a combination of sharing so that there's an orientation that you can have to your own experience. Now, I know there's often a challenge in talking, sharing about these, that this kind of a experiential part of our awareness, that it can be heard from only a conceptual or intellectual place only, and that can be challenging if we're not able to connect to it in some sort of intuitive sensing or an experientially oriented way. So I just want to call that to your attention, that if somehow hearing what I'm about to share triggers some sort of conceptual confusion or you don't understand it intellectually, for me that's not as important as to whatever you are hearing, that it resonates with you in some sort of intuitive way. So in a very simple way, the way I would define it, I'm going to extrapolate on that in what I'm going to share with you, is very simply put, these two parts, these two dimensions of our inner being is presence, which is very simply put, it's awareness. It's that inner spacious awareness that we carry. And the form is the form of our experiencing. Everything else in our experiencing is the form of our being. So that's, in essence, the simple expression of what presence and form is. So I want to talk about what is that the essential part of our being. There's a lot of different words that describe the core of who we are, our essence, our essential self, our true self. From my view, this core of our being is where all of the qualities of our authentic self reside as qualities of our being. Innocence, creativity, aliveness, love, whatever those qualities are, whenever we are in touch with ourselves, we feel those qualities as felt energies, and is unmistakably who we are. This is the part of us that we long to bring to life, to experience in its fullness and to share. It's what we share, and it's what we yearn for in sharing in our relationships. It's the heart of our authenticity with someone, that when there's real connection, there's mutual caring, understanding, seeing and being seen. When we bring a full spacious awareness of presence to our experiencing, it allows us to access and live from these essential qualities. In NVC, we use the term need. In my experience, the human needs that we identify are simply a manifestation of these qualities. It's a manifestation of those qualities that we yearn for. So I'm going to pause here. I'm going to talk about a few sentences about presence. Presence has the quality of infinitely spacious awareness. The nature of awareness itself is that it is boundless. There's no boundaries. It simply exists as part of our being. And the more we practice self-compassion, the more we cultivate simple presence. Presence has a quality of being, and in some unknown way, it doesn't belong to us. It comes from some other place. It simply exists in and through us. And in a very grounded way, very practical way for me, presence is a function of our bodily existence. It is in my body, through my body, that the awareness helps me to be fully present. I cannot be present from an idea. So if my intention is always to be present in the energy of my body, my breathing, my sensing helps me to come to that present moment awareness. We can only breathe in the present moment. can't breathe in the future or in the past. And we can only sense and feel any energy in the present moment. So it's as though our body, our bodily existence, and the awareness of that is a portal into presence. And the presence is the container of our being, the container of our awareness. So there's some expressions of presence as I view it. Pause another few seconds and see if there's any response, for clarity, or resonance that anybody cares to share about that.
It's connected to the last bit, but also the bit about needs being a manifestation of the qualities that we yearn for. So there's a sense that those qualities are living within us, and the yearning is that we've lost touch with that, or I'm trying to fit with some of the needs words.
Yes, let me give you an example. Let's just say that in a relationship, I may experience, say, my need for support. And in this interaction with this person, in the NVC language, you could say my need for support wasn't met when the person didn't pick me up from the airport. So when I get in touch with that, I get in touch with how the need lives in me inwardly. Not so much that it manifests in the behavior, but that how I value support in life. And when I get in touch with the valuing, I can feel it as a yearning. I yearn for support. And the quality of support, it actually, when I feel the energies of support when it's present in my yearning, or when I think about times in my life where that has been present in life, there's a feeling there. There's an energy in that feeling of support. And it's very similar to other words. It's very similar to care. It's very similar to mattering, to consideration. And for me, it's very similar, along with care, it's very similar to the energy of love. So where support manifests in practical life, if I delve deeply into the feeling sense of it, the energy of it, I can connect it to how I long for, how I value, how support lives in me. Was that helpful?
That is helpful. Is it that sense that you talked about you got in touch with love, so maybe there's certain qualities of presence that underpin things like love?
Yes, for me, that's how I experience it. There's certain fundamental qualities or yearnings or needs that sort of underpin much of life for me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. There's another hand.
How helpful it is to know that breathing or just noticing the body, just being embodied, helps keep me in the present. And then I was thinking about things that pull me out of the present. I mean, why can't I do that all the time? What I was hit with was, it's really trauma. Trauma tends to pull me out of the present. Even if I'm not traumatized right at the moment, it's either the memory of a trauma or the worry that something horrible is going to happen in the future. I'm constantly pulled either to plan constantly, to try to keep bad things from happening to me in the future. All of that just came up when you were talking about being aware of your body and your breathing to stay present.
Great. Thank you. We'll take one more.
When you speak about these qualities of essence and the connection with, I guess, that our yearning for these qualities comes through as an expression of need, I'm envisioning maybe that there's a few core qualities like love and perhaps a few others, and then I'm envisioning a map, I guess, of those qualities of love, presence, compassion, something like that, and then a diagram that shows these are the needs that are maybe connected or that reflect the yearning for those qualities.
It makes perfect sense for me. And as you're speaking, I have an exercise that I would recommend for you and others that care to follow this thread, because the distinction I want to make, I know there's nothing in what you said that indicates what I'm about to say, but I'm always cautious about coming to our experience in a conceptual only way and coming to our experience in the fullness of the felt experiencing of it. So if you want to develop clarity about that, my recommendation is to, what is it for you? What are your core qualities? I don't believe that a map is going to be applicable to everybody, right? In the sense that I think that if we come to this experiencing this clarity, we come to it through our own reality, our own lived experiencing. And so an exercise that I would recommend, if you care to do it, is whenever you have a life experience and you can identify a need met or unmet, it may be easier to connect to if there was a need that was met. Whatever it happens to be, support, collaboration, honesty, whatever it is, you can even write it down. On the left-hand column, identify the need. And then on the right-hand column, start to feel into what this need feels like in its fullness, as it's fulfilled. What does it feel like? And then just start to free flow. Describe the qualities. And it doesn't have to be one word. And so let's just say that there is authenticity or integrity on the left-hand side. And you start to write, what does it feel like in your body? So maybe there's a quality of strength. You might say strength. Maybe there's a sense of, I feel forthright in my life and I'm standing for my own life, or something like that. So that you actually feel into the qualities of a particular need. And you might come to some core qualities or not. For me, this exercise has been very helpful for me, and I've shared it with others. It helps to orient our life into the fundamental essential energies and qualities that lie behind or in the needs. So thank you for bringing that up.
I've noticed in my life that there is a quality that I yearn for and that I experience. And I also notice that when I try to name it and create a path to it, that often it doesn't work so well. And yet somehow I connect with it, and other times I don't. And I resonated with what you said about how presence, for example, is not something that we can create or make happen, but somehow it's there, and maybe we open to the experience, but it's not something you can force. That was my sense, at least, of what I heard and what you said.
Yeah, that's pretty consistent with what I was sharing.
Thank you, Robert.
Sure. So I just want to say one description of what I call form. As I said, there's two primary dimensions of our inner being. One is presence. This is basically awareness. And then what are we aware of in self-awareness? There's an inner current of living at its very basic level. And it takes all the different forms that we experience within. Breath, movements, emotional feelings, physical sensations, images, thoughts, our longings, their yearnings. And basically, if we look at what is underlying the thread that's all of that, is life current, and it takes all the different forms. And so in self-compassion, when the form of our experience is suffering, is painful, it takes all the different forms of loneliness, fear, anger, confusion, even numbness. A way of viewing self-compassion is that we start to bring presence through awareness. And what that means is there's a space. There's a space of awareness that we start to allow. We say, I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling anxious, or some form of knotted experience in our suffering. In self-compassion, we direct our attention to that, so that whatever it is in the form of our experience, the nonverbal message of the space and the allowing is, whatever it is that you are feeling as we speak to this knot of experience within ourselves, you are welcome. Okay. We don't say the words of that so much as that we energetically welcome that knot, that tension, that holding back, that constriction. We open to it and we breathe into it. So when we do that, we are simply present to it. Our mind has been conditioned and culturally conditioned through a trauma and all sorts of things to try to do something with the form. So the form itself creates its own resistance. Our thoughts create resistance. In a way, we're divided within ourselves. We argue with ourselves. We want to change the very nature of our experiencing, and in doing so, we bring a kind of violence to ourselves, unknowingly, unintentionally. So presence never argues with form. There isn't an argument. The allowing is the complete different approach. And it's a gradual practice because that tendency to resist the form of our experience is so powerful, it's so strong, that it often has a grip on our experience. And so it requires a kind of gentleness within ourselves and an honoring of that tendency as we gently and slowly bring presence to ourselves. So I'm going to pause there for another few seconds. I see one hand.
I'm feeling the need to approach that inner violence with that same compassion and presence. Really hard to do that. Is there anything that you do different when you're with that violence than you do with other energies, or is it just all the same practice?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by the other energies.
Like grief or insecurity.
Well, actually, for me, no. Whatever the form of our experience is, whether it's sadness or grief, it's our life energy, and it takes that particular form. So whether it's that kind of resistance and judgment or violence that we impose on ourselves, the approach to compassion is the same. We just allow it. We welcome it. Now, I think that what you addressed here is that it's not always easy to do, and that we get stuck or lost in it. We may not know how to do it, and so we are not always able to do that, bring presence to ourselves. This is why it's important to receive the presence through another person or from another person. We can't always access our ability to be present to ourselves because we're in such deep reactivity or maybe confusion or lost in our own experience that it's really difficult to sort of stand back and breathe. So then it requires the presence of another. If we were to look at presence as just simply open, spacious awareness, it exists in us, through us, in others, and through another. We're not able to provide our own inner healing, so we receive it from another, a group, a community. And I think this is why the groups that we gather in, whether it's practice group or some other support group, workshops, trainings, is so essential to our own inner transformation and healing. So important to be in a supportive and loving community to receive compassionate presence from others. Especially when we're in those areas where we get triggered the most vulnerable, wounding, when we're not able to access that inner spaciousness with ourselves. The other thing I wanted to say on this is that when in a loving and supportive community, we receive empathy, that caring presence from another, then what happens is that gradually that supports us in accessing our own inner presence, and then it supports us in developing the inner strength that comes from providing our own inner presence. For me, this is why it's so important to be in the community and have supportive relationships where we can live in the shared intention to provide compassionate presence to one another. So I'm not sure I completely addressed what your response or your question was. Is there more?
No, that feels complete.
Yeah, great. Okay, I think I see another hand up.
This question goes back to the very last thing we were talking about last time, seeking help from others. Last time we were talking about not being afraid to seek help. And I'm confused because maybe I missed a bit of what you just said, but on one hand, I hear the value of being able to provide everything I need from within myself, the spacious presence, the awareness, the compassion, and not needing others. And then I hear that we do need others. And my experience has been that sometimes I have opened myself up and been hurt, and damage has been done. And some of those wounds are things that I'm trying to recover from now. Can you hear my question?
I think I hear a couple of things in that.
Okay.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. It sounds like you're trying to develop some clarity around what appears to be a discrepancy in what the sharing is. One is, on the one hand, that there is a a value to developing inner self-compassion and get in
right.
touch with the inner life. And
right.
then you heard me say, well, then there's a value in connecting with others and receiving support of the presence and support of others. You're trying to kind of make those two fit together.
Yes, and fit together with the fact that sometimes when you reach out for help from others, you are wounded instead.
Yeah, well, that would be a related but separate topic, and let me just speak to that first. It's true. I mean, I agree. I don't know anybody that has not reached out to others and felt pain. So I think that it's important for me, too, if I'm going to reach out to others. It has different elements. One of them is that I'm always taking a risk. I don't know if I'm going to be received.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to be seen, understood, supported, if those needs are going to be met. So there's always a risk. There's always a reaching into the unknown. Even though I have had experiences of being hurt, I want to take care of myself in terms of before I open up and am vulnerable in reaching out to someone, I want to trust in my intuitive sensing of trust and develop trust. Do I have trust to open up here? So that would be one consideration that I have. But I don't want to ever, because I've been hurt, to have that prevent me from reaching out. So that's the second part I'm speaking to. I'm wondering if that addresses that part of what you were saying.
Yes, that was very helpful.
So the other part that I want to say, I'm hoping that you'll be able to integrate these two, is first, the language that you use, I say it in a different language. It's not that we need others, but that we are developing this quality of presence within ourselves. We can bring a spacious awareness within ourselves. And for me, that's the inner work. It's a spiritual practice. It's an awareness practice. And so when I'm able to do that more and more, I develop that kind of inner presence or inner strength, inner reliability. But we're not always able to do that. It doesn't mean I don't aspire to it. And when we're not able to do it, then the need isn't for others, but the need is for presence, the presence that another can provide, the support, the empathy that another can provide. So I want to make sure that you understand the distinction between what we need, my understanding of the definition of ease, we never need things or objects or other people or behaviors. What we need is the living quality that exists that another individual can provide. So if I'm lost in some distress and part of my inner yearning is that I would value support that helped me to come to some inner healing, then I will want to seek that by asking for help or support with someone that I trust. How was that?
That was very helpful. Would it be fair to say that it's similar, for instance, to, oh, I need to breathe air, but if for some reason I am unable to breathe on my own, I need oxygen. I don't need the person who provides the oxygen. Or the mask, what I need is the oxygen, and somebody provides it for me.
I think that's similar. Sometimes the physical examples are not exactly the same as the other, as another
right.
component.
I need awareness,
yes.
and I'm unable to provide it for myself. It's very helpful when it's provided by someone else.
Yes, exactly.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So there's those two dimensions, and so, you know, it doesn't necessarily even have to be something that's painful. If it's the form of our being as any experience. And so even if we're feeling joyful or happy or celebratory, that's the form of life that yearns for connection and for celebration and for sharing. So bringing presence to that is also important. I think I also want to, I'm sort of shifting slightly here, into another distinction that I think I made earlier, but I want to repeat it, and it has to do with this, what we call yearning or longing. And it's about this fullness of our inner being, this inner longing, our life energy, that when I say longing or yearning or wanting as an expression of this life energy seeking fulfillment, sometimes they use the word seek, like seeking fulfillment, but I want to make the difference between yearning, longing as one activity and seeking. So if we're seekers, one way to characterize it, and seeking goes out from the mind, and it seeks objects, seeks some sort of outcome or external source, projects it into the future. And it's a manifestation of our suffering when we seek some answer, some solution outside of us. And yearning is something that's different. It goes deep into the heart, experienced as longing in the present moment. It doesn't necessarily go out into the future. So that when we yearn for love, we get in touch with the energy of what we are yearning for. And it's a direction to feel that quality reverberating in our heart. But if we're seeking, then it often looks like we're seeking a person or a thing in the form of an object or a situation. And that often comes from an energy of deficiency or urgency, the sense of lack. And so that distinction between the qualities that we yearn for that are in the present moment, when we're in that, relaxing to that longing, there's no sense of urgency, but there's often this feeling of inspiration within that. I'm wondering if that touches anybody in any way, and clear that distinction for me is very important in this work.
I've often heard it said, surrender to the longing and allowing that yearning to connect me with that which I'm yearning for. Oftentimes, instead of allowing and sinking into the yearning, I reach out for something to make the discomfort go away. And then instead of connecting in that moment, I'm off on another journey looking for that which is actually calling to me from within.
Yeah. For me, I think this is a pretty important inner practice to experience that distinction. There's another element of distinguishing between that kind of seeking that comes from lack and the inner yearning. I can tell the difference when I put my attention on my body. When I'm in the yearning, there's something that relaxes in me. There's a warmth that opens up into my heart. There's a trusting that comes with a yearning, the sense that everything is okay, that I don't have to go anywhere. That doesn't mean that I will not act. It doesn't mean that I will not move towards fulfilling what it is that I yearn for, but it doesn't come from fear. It doesn't come from desperation. It comes from a relaxed trusting in where the life in me wants to go. But when I'm seeking, there's a tension in my body. There's a tightness in my stomach. I feel there's fear, and it's oriented towards, unless I get this, unless this person does what I want them to do, or I have this life circumstance happen the way it's supposed to happen, then something bad will happen. So the body, for me, always shows me if I'm in the yearning state or if I'm in the seeking state.
Thanks for that clarification, Robert. I definitely can relate to that distinction between fearfully seeking and trusting in this moment-by-moment experience and allowing it to unfold.
Great, yeah. Thank you. There's one thing I want to say in addition to that. In this inner work of self-compassion, unconditional self-acceptance, you see, it's easy for our thinking mind, our judging mind, the separated mind, to evaluate almost anything that's heard and turn it into further alienation. You know, for example, with what I just said, I'm wondering if anybody came to the conclusion that therefore seeking is bad, that seeking is not good, that we shouldn't seek, that somehow if I find myself in tightness and seeking some kind of approval or something outside of me from urgency, that I'm in a space of whatever that is, wrong, bad, I'm not supposed to be there. I think that's a strong tendency to come to conclusions like that once a description like seeking and the distinction between that and yearning is made of something that is life-serving, something that is life-alienating. Our mind turns what is life-alienating into bad, into the enemy, something we shouldn't do, which is really the counter, the opposite of what self-compassion is. So that if we find ourselves in urgency, in fear, so desperately wanting something to happen in our life, that's the very place that the life in us is calling for compassion. To bring that tendency to create a space and a caring around that, so that we can listen to the voice in there, in that fear, in that desperation, and listen to what we're longing for in that. I just wanted to make that point. I'm always wanting to just point out as much as possible that possibility for the thinking, our thinking alienated mind, to interpret, I think, what is said in that way. I see there's a hand up, and I'd love to hear what you have to say.
The last thing you said made me realize that I think this is part of what I'm starting to get that I think is really potentially transforming, and in fact already I feel the first sprouting feelings of change, which is what I feel like I'm starting to understand is that when I notice that I'm in, you know, sort of freaking out, I notice that I'm in a, you call it seeking, which I think is a very kind way of describing, sometimes it's a very freaking out state, right? And that
yeah.
What I can do is realize that that is a place that's rich with feeling and therefore meaning, and that this is like a treasure trove. This is a signal, you know, for the pirate ship that there's buried treasure here, so that I can, instead of, as you say, going, oh God, I'm so tense, oh, I'm so terrible, instead I can say, oh, okay, I'm freaking out. That means this is important. I'm getting a tool here for coping with myself that I did not have before. So I just wanted to mention that.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you so much. So happy that you got that. For me, that is the essence of this work, and just the way you described it is very clear. You know, I use different words, but I love the way you said it. And in essence, what it's about turning towards ourselves. When we're freaking out, we turn towards that treasure trove. And that's where the richness is. That's where we bring compassion to that freaking out experience inside of us. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I think what I'd like to do is I want to support people connecting with one another here. And I'd like to move into working with another person in pairs. But I'm going to ask you to do something actually very similar to the paired work we've done before. So I'd like you first to sort of each person check in with one another. Just say, how are you feeling? What's alive with you in the present moment? And sort of briefly check in, and then allow the other person to check in. So you both check in with what is present with you. So you just have a sense of connecting. And then one person at a time, go. And it's essentially a practice in sharing what is alive in you right now. What in what's been shared right now, perhaps, is there a learning that's taking place in you? Is there something within this learning about how you're approaching yourself with self-compassion? Perhaps sharing a specific experience. Is there a painful, constricting experience that you'd like to share with the other? Whatever it is in the form of your experience, any thinking, physical, emotional feeling, the energy of a need or longing, to share what's alive in you. And the listener, what I'd like you to do is just primarily provide a compassionate and empathic presence of just listening for the life in the other. Not so much listening for the details in the story, that's there too, but what is that life that's reaching out in the other? And provide empathic support. You can reflect so that the experience that you're providing is to sort of receiving the life that the person is sharing and reflecting it back. So it's one to keep this very simple. And this is done in service of the other person providing as much honesty and presence for themselves in their expression, and the listener providing the presence in the listening space. And then we'll do the same thing going the other way. And then we'll break into the larger group for have any sharing or debriefing after that. So why don't we begin the process? Okay, so everybody's in the main room. So I'll just ask everybody to just take a moment to connect with yourself. What are you feeling? What are you experiencing now? What do you carry from this last 10 minutes? just to check in and feel what you're feeling right now. So what I'd like to do is just to ask you all, this space right now, I'd like to take some time in sharing or debriefing with whatever came out of this paired work. And even if there's anything left over from what I shared at the beginning part of the class before the paired work, I'd like to hear any sharing, what the experience was like for you, or I'd like to hear if there's anything kind of left over in terms of this work, clarity or wanting an understanding of what I've shared so far and maybe not sure of what I shared or not sure of your own experience, your own practice of this inner compassion, because I'm really wanting to support everybody in learning this process. I'd like to open it up to any sharing, checking things out with me, any questions. So I see a couple of hands up.
I had so much that came alive for me during your discussion of seeking and yearning that really applied so much to what's happening in my life right now, and just the clarity was such a relief. One of the things that came up is that I felt a lot of frustration in this class because of the format of the telephone. It's not my favorite way to communicate. There are many times when I wanted to participate and I just haven't been able to, and I realized that there was a lot of urgency behind my wanting to participate and some fear that I wouldn't be able to say what was really in my heart to share. And David asked me, well, what would be the worst thing that could happen? And that question was very revealing to me because I realized it really wasn't about the other people in the class, and it certainly wasn't about you, Robert. It was really about not wanting to deal with my jackal. I was really needing a lot of comfort and ease right now, and I'm dealing with a very difficult family illness, and it's very, very emotionally difficult, and I'm wanting ease so much, and I was really afraid that after I shared, my jackals would bother me. So I found that so eye-opening that I decided to share.
Thank you. I appreciate the willingness to share, and it sounds like the value that you got from that exercise and David's question and feedback was just allowed the kind of self-awareness to come forth about what was behind the urgency and the fear, and about, it was really about yourself, about your own inner experience.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Do you have your hand up?
I wanted to say that every single person that I get to be in a breakout with, I just feel like I just fall in love with them and this process and their honesty. And I feel as if somehow I'm actually doing the thing where I'm allowing myself to ask for help and to appreciate feelings close to people who are sharing from their authentic self. So that was why I raised my hand.
Wonderful. I'm just hearing that as a kind of an acknowledgement or celebration for the value that you're getting with this practice and the connections you're having with other people, the love that comes from that, and the allowing that you're experiencing within yourself.
Yes.
Yes. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Next.
I was going to ask a question, and now I'm just struck with the layers of this thing called presence, I guess, where we're in the breakout and I start talking and I'm already noticing layers just in what I'm talking about and the dynamic just between me and my partner in the breakout. And then there's the interruption that happened, and then there's the dynamic of that which played into it, and just how all these things are just layering and layering. And even as I'm speaking right now, there's another layer of, you know, here I am speaking in this group and there's things coming up for me. So I'm just really just struck by that. It's like really interesting and it's fun, actually. So that was the main thing. And I don't know if there's time for my question.
I'm curious about the question. I appreciate what I'm hearing as just sort of an insights about the different dimensions of your experience and presence, all the different layers. It sounds like you're having some very rich awareness about that.
And, yeah, just how much is going on in there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my question was about the seeking and the yearning piece.
Yes.
Susan had asked me, you know, kind of just where was I with that? I noticed that I was in the seeking part and just kind of said, oh, let me put my toe in the water of the yearning, kind of see what's there, and kind of just like a going back and forth. And I'm wondering if you had anything to say about, I often feel myself saying, oh, how about I move myself over more into like the beauty of the need, feeling the need as it lives inside of me. And then I sometimes feel myself getting pulled back. And so I'm just wondering if you had anything to say about that.
Let me see if I understand. Pulled back into that energy of seeking, that constriction, that urgency energy. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, or a deficiency.
Yeah.
I would call it more that lack.
Deficiency,
yeah.
So you're in fullness, but then you switch back into that deficiency.
Yeah.
You seem to move back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there something, like I'm reluctant to try too hard to conjure up the beauty of the need, or but wanting to allow it.
But. Yeah, well, for me, what occurs to me in my own experience is that fullness or the beauty of the need emerges out of the compassionate embrace of the urgency. We penetrate, you enter into life, especially the painful life, the seeking, the urgency. You enter into it without judging it. But there's also a sense of following the flow. If the flow takes you into fullness, into beauty, you just simply allow that. And you follow it without trying to force it or make it happen or imagine yourself into it. For me, it's more fulfilling when I just simply allow it to unfold. And if the seeking arises, if that tightness or that urgency arises, then you go there. You turn to that. You turn to life. And you just sort of follow wherever the life arises in you. So seeking arises, deficiency arises at some level of intensity in your body, in your feeling. So you approach that. You just simply allow that. Is that helpful? Am I addressing your question?
I just want to see if I'm getting what you're saying. So it's like just continuing to say, oh, I'm feeling that sense of deficiency with this right now.
Yeah. And that's the beginning level, the entry level. You feel the deficiency, but allow that. Feel it energetically. And then sense into, is there a longing, a need in that deficiency? If you're afraid and you're seeking lack, are you longing for something? There's an empathic opening and allowing into what is the life that is reaching for life in that seeking.
So
without judging the seeking, you're really open to it, welcome it.
I'm imagining that it's, and maybe from experience too, that it's kind of a cyclical process for a while.
Yeah.
Because it may be something slightly different, and then I kind of get through that, and then there's something else arises. And
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm breathing. That's,
okay.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So I'd really love to open up to, is there anyone, I'd like to hear from anyone, that has any kind of challenge or question or would seek clarity about this inner practice or anything that I've shared?
Regarding the last interaction, which was rather disastrous, and I noticed my body for a small instant tensing up, and then I was so grateful for your explanation, I decided to simply be present as much as possible, and suddenly there was this aliveness instead of frustration, or within the frustration, I really felt this beautiful aliveness. And when I finally got back to a partner, I loved so much her sharing, and it was almost like a contagious, all I saw and felt was aliveness. It was almost like being inside a Rumi poem, this tremendous aliveness, and at one point it didn't really matter whether it was positive or negative.
Mm.
It was a very lovely experience, quite profound.
Beautiful. I love that sharing. It just so... just feel some inspiration, so resonates with that space when I'm able to enter into that space.
And then I thought, oh, maybe Robert did this on purpose. maybe this is part of the training.
You mean create the technical frustration?
Yes. I thought, this is so perfect, as we get to put into action the very thing that we're
were learning about, and I thought, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could say I'm that brilliant, but I didn't think about that. I'm a little devious, but maybe not that devious. I'm glad it resulted in your experience, though.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have your hand up.
This is something which came up for me in the group. It's an ongoing struggle I have. I think going back to that diagram that you gave us earlier on with the authentic mm-hmm. self and then the vulnerable, wounded self and then defensive structures. And there's a part of me which so struggles with the authentic self is so valuable and so precious. And then even the wounded self, because it's, you know, gone through so much stuff, it's something which I'm so willing to have compassion for. And I've, in my life, found a number of other people who are willing to hold compassion for that. But there's a part of me which, both for myself internally and also I assume that everyone else is going to be rejecting my defensive self. It's just like this stuck place that, especially when the defensive self gets really hardcore, you know, that fierce inner critic that gets that brutal edge to it. It's like I'm assuming that there's no compassion for that, both inside and from the rest of the world. The question is how to bring compassion to that part which assumes that there's no compassion available for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really appreciate that because it, to me what it brings to, I totally agree with you that if we look at it within or we look at it without, you know, it's relatively easy to be compassionate and caring to our authenticity or to vulnerability, to raw pain when we are suffering our vulnerability. But it's so difficult, I think, because of our very conditioning, because we have been in that space in our protective and defensive structures, it's so difficult to bring compassion to that part of us. And I think it's a challenge that I've observed within us and in life. Just an aside, another example is, you know, it's relatively easy to be compassionate to somebody who's in pain and suffering, but it's really hard to be compassionate to a person who's violent, who's bringing pain to other people. That's where it's most needed. I mean, this is where it is most needed in life, that part of us that's difficult. And using the word difficult, just I think I'm rewording what I'm hearing you say. Part that it's the most difficult to create some space around, to create some acceptance about. This is a space where compassion is the most needed. In practicing presence and compassion, one of the things has become clear to me that in order for it to be effective, compassion has no preferences. No preference over authenticity, over our core essence, over vulnerability, or over the protective and defensive structures. It's all life. When we're able to be seated in compassion, it senses there's beauty in all of it, with no preference. One isn't better than the other. But the question is implied in there, well, of course, well, that's difficult. Well, then what do you do? How do you do this? And for me, it's sort of like when I face my own difficulty, it's so important that I'm patient with myself. If I'm stuck, I allow myself even to be stuck. I allow myself to be in the difficulty and to be compassionate with myself as I have. It doesn't come easy for me to be compassionate with those difficult parts of me. So I'm just going to pause. I've said a lot of words and see if there's anything that I shared in responding to you that is connecting or meaningful to you.
I mean, everything you've shared is really connecting and meaningful. You're talking about having to, you know, be careful who you ask for empathic support from. And this is an area where it seems doubly important because there are people who can hold empathy for painful, wounded places who won't be able to for those really rigid, controlling, violent, you know, protective places.
Absolutely. I am totally with you on that. And I want to be careful. I want to be careful who I offer myself up to, you know, even if it's those painful, controlling, difficult parts. You know, there's a limitation in almost every practice, and it's so with NVC that views judgment as bad and authenticity as good. You know, the symbol of the giraffe and the jackal, and jackals mm-hmm. are bad. And mm-hmm. if you're jackaling with somebody else, they're very quick to point that out to you, you know. No, you're not supposed to be. And Jack, where's your feelings and needs? And, you know, does that resonate with you? I don't know anybody for whom it doesn't, because it's just part of the practice. It's part of us learning how to tune into that real human part of us. For me, I want to be patient with myself, and I want to realize that this is an ongoing practice. Day by day, moment by moment, is when I develop this inner presence with myself. I want to be especially caring for the parts of me that are difficult to access. They're equally considering all the parts, but those are the parts that I think within myself, and now it's to look at in life itself with others, that compassion is so important.
Yeah, so this has really helped. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you for bringing this up. You have your hand up.
There's something that I've noticed that I really love if you would speak to. Sometimes when we're sharing in our dyads, I notice that I'm hearing somebody go through their feelings, and then they'll, you know, move to their longings, and you know, and then they might feel better. And it happens really quickly. And I find myself feeling like the train kind of went by me and I didn't get a chance to look at it. I didn't have a chance to process and feel the feelings that the person was having before going into that next step. And I almost want to say, you know, can you just slow down a bit, because I'm wanting really, and I don't know what's happening there exactly, but maybe you do.
I'm not sure what's happening. I'm hearing what you're saying, and I like what you're saying, and my suggestion would be to ask for that. For me, this process is so much richer and deeper when I slow down. So I appreciate the feedback, because it would help me to make maybe more explicit instructions or what I'm asking you to do. And so whether it's in the breakout group or in your practice, I do recommend, for example, if people express feelings and then move into their longings, to just slow down in the sense of, when you express a feeling, can you add to that, this is where I feel it and sense it in my body. The shape of it, color of it. This is where it is. And describe it, the feeling, with other words other than just a feeling word.
Somehow that just feels more connecting to me.
I resonate with
that better.
So I'm sensing that one of the things you really want and value is a sense of a fuller connection with a more full presence of the other person when they can delve into, slow down, a richer part of their experience is much, much more satisfying for you.
That's what it is.
So that's what I would recommend, not just in the breakout groups, but to one's own inner experience, and especially when we're sharing, is to slow it down, to pause, to flush it out, feel into it. Use different words.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have your hand up. I'd love to hear from you.
When you were saying that when people are violent, that's the time that they need the most compassion. It's also when it's most difficult for us to give compassion. I've had that question for a long time in my mind about people who are violent, either verbally or physically violent. To understand, what is the underlying need? What is this yearning or longing in them that seeking express itself? Use Gaddafi as an example. I would specifically like to hear, how do you see the underlying universal need that he's trying to fulfill by being violent toward his own people, for example?
Do you mean what's going currently on in the world right now with Libya and Muammar Gaddafi?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's what I want to, my response to this question, and I can understand where the question is coming from. I'm going to make a little comment on how I'm hearing the question and then answer it the best I can. I'm guessing that you're really wanting an understanding for when in life you encounter people who are verbally or physically violent. You're wanting to have an understanding to make sense of it, to connect with what needs are they trying to express, what universal needs. I think that the most helpful way to understand this is not to try to understand it, you know, a hypothetical situation, but try to understand it in real life with real encounters you have in your own relationships. And maybe that will help you understand someone like Gaddafi. I think the principles are the same. I think there's at least two levels of needs that a person is attempting to meet. And of course, on one level, it's probably different for each individual and their individual situation. So I can't tell you what those needs are. because it's contextual. It depends on what is the specific situation that that person is expressing their verbal or physical violence with respect to. And for me, maybe it's not important to identify with the specific need, but that there is some there, that there is something there. There's something important. There's something that they're expressing through that energy we call anger or violence or aggression or coercion, that there is a life that they're reaching for, but they're doing in such a way that it brings pain and suffering to people. I'm guessing that at least on the one universal level, that people are wanting to be seen and heard, and that there is a sense of desperation and helplessness and powerlessness out of which violence comes. So there's a sense of desperation that the only strategy that they can imagine to be seen and to be heard and recognized, they can move ahead and get their needs met, is out of the helplessness comes the violence, where there's the kind of power or apparent power that comes from that. I mean, you've touched on a really huge question for me, and I don't want to do it disservice by just spending a couple of minutes on it. But I'm hoping to, you know, point out to the most important elements of it in terms of how can you meet another person? What happens inside of you when you receive their violence? So that question to me is just as important as trying to connect to what is the need that the other person is reaching for. I'm feeling a little frustration with the answer I'm giving you because I know there's so much more in this. So I'm wanting to just check in with you before we finish the class and see if what I said is in any way answers your question or is helpful.
Yeah, it is helpful. And, I would like to be able to respond to those people and situations from more compassion and more understanding. So I think that's what's motivating my question. So this is a good starting point for me.
Thank you for that. I just want to add something. I know I'm reiterating it, but for me, what helps me to respond to people with more compassion is totally dependent on my ability to respond to my own inner violence with compassion. Without that, without my inner compassion, inner spaciousness, it's that inner space that is the place from which I receive another person's life energy. So if I'm tight and judging or scared, I'm not able to fully receive the other person. So for me, that's the primary territory of my inner work as I receive anybody.
That's very helpful. I'll give that more thought and more important. Just giving myself compassion for my own inner violence.
So our time has come to a close. I express my gratitude for everybody who was in the class. My ongoing suggestion is for you all to continue this moment by moment, pausing and patience and practice with your own inner life, creating more open space of allowing in that. And as you do that, I'm confident that you will be more able to receive another person with empathy and compassion. So thank you for all your time today. Take care. Until next time. Bye-bye.